Mr. Dugan, thank you so much for taking some time out of your busy schedule, I'm sure, to talk to us. I'd first like to start by seeing the evaluation, basically where we are at now with the special military operation. It's been a year. What's your assessment? Where are we at now? How are things going?
I think that this special military operation that now is something like a big and real and full-scale war. So it started as special military operation. Now we could not deny that we are dealing with the war. This war, this conflict, has different layers. I think that on the first level, we have now the growing understanding of the conflict of civilizations, precisely as Samuel Huntington has put it some years before. And we see how incompatible between each other are those civilizations, Russian, Christian, Orthodox, traditional, much more traditional civilization with heavy inclination to the social justice as a heritage of the Soviet time and based on the dream of the eternal greatness of Russia on one hand and modern Western global liberal democracy pretending to be a unique form of organization of society, of politics, of economy, and that's liberal globalism is other civilization. This civilization, global Western civilization, pretended after the fall of the Soviet Union to become the unique one, the only one. The main idea of Fukuyama, with whom I have chance to speak, to discuss, main idea of Fukuyama, shared, I think, by present administration of Biden, that after the fall of the Soviet Union, there come the end of the history. And end of the history means that Western postmodern liberal global order should be imposed on everybody, should be accepted by the people universally, and is regarded as unique system of values, of rules, and so on and so on. So Russia now is in conflict against this pretension of the Western modern global liberal civilization to be unique. Russia insists, no, you are wrong. We are other civilization. We don't share your values. We deny universal meaning of your rules, and we are going to establish multipolar world order with the Russia independent pole totally free from your influence.
What does that say about the West's moral compass? They're constantly preaching the world about democracy, about human rights, and here they are basically supporting neo-Nazis that we've seen in Kiev's regime. How do they justify that to their own people?
First of all, they tried to hide that, for because we could not find any hint of this growing huge movement of Nazification of Ukrainian minds. And that is the reality, but the West strongly denies that. So when Bernard-Henri Lévy, one of the main defenders of the liberal democracy on the global scale, is meeting with Ukrainian Nazis, saying, no, they are not Nazis, but they have swastikas on their sleeves and so on. So they try to hide. They try to hide this fact. But why such contradiction? Where are the moral norms? Because I think the West, as long as I understand, the West thinks in such manner. Now, we could not, by other way, to create artificial nationalism in Ukraine and to push Ukrainians to fight Russians, because they are not ready, they will be not ready, they would not be ready to fight for liberal values, because they don't mean anything for present days Ukrainian, or some maybe for some city Kiev population, but in general for this traditional society, liberal values cannot be the main goal to defend. So they need something other, and the most radical form to promote, to create this artificial pseudo consciousness is nationalism, a radical form of nationalism, Ukrainian Russia phobic fascism, and that is used by liberals, by global liberals, because in their territories they strictly prohibit any hint on patriotism, and they destroy any kind of nationalism or patriotism in their territories. But in Ukraine, on the other hand, they make it flourish. I think they count to use it. And after destruction of Ukraine, there will be nothing anymore. So I don't think they seriously believe in the possible victory of Ukraine. Ukraine will disappear during this conflict. So there is no such big danger, because this artificial Nazi creation as modern Ukraine sooner or later will cease to exist, and there will be no Ukraine, no problem, no Nazis. So they are created that exactly as they have used ISIS, Islamic State, or Islamic fundamentalism, having nothing to do with values of radical Islam. The West cynically has used Al-Qaeda and radical Islam to attack pro-Soviet or socialist anti-capitalist regimes in the Islamic world. So something like that we have in Ukraine now. They have created artificial Nazi paradise in order to destroy that.
And now we're talking about the West. They're not only saying statements like defeating Russia or winning over Russia. They have forecasts saying that Russia will not only be defeated, but it will also fall apart. It will collapse. It will break apart into several republics. For example, we had George Friedman, who's the head of the Stratford Geopolitical Intelligence Platform. He is one of those people who is coming out with statements like this, saying that Russia will be defeated, no doubt about that, and also it will break up into republics. Why is Russia breaking up into republics in particular beneficial to them?
I think that is completely logic from their part, because if Russia will stay united, if Russia will stay independent and sovereign, when Russia increases more its independence after the victory in Ukraine, the world will be not ruled by the West. So that is the independent Russia, with such growth of patriotic consciousness during Putin's time, it is the real obstacle to create the global world under control of the West.
How do you see this playing out in the long run? Because right now I feel like we're sort of at a standstill, because no one seems to want to negotiate. Russia seems willing to negotiate. We see from Ukraine's side that the West is encouraging no talks and more supplies of weapons to make sure that they are equal with Russia. I don't even know if that's even possible. So how do we get out of the standstill if the West continue to arm Kiev and Russia obviously doesn't back down? How do we come out of this?
I think, first of all, in the present situation, the peace talks are impossible. Are impossible for all sides, because we didn't liberate full territories of our four new subjects. And before this full liberation, we could not start peace talks basing on our conditions. So the Kyiv, seeing our hesitation and understanding a kind of difference between the image of invincible Russia and our real state, as well things that a kind of the change of the balance is possible with such huge aid and help from the West, military, political, intelligence, and structural help from the West can, as Kyiv suggests or presumes, can change the balance and to help to them to liberate what they think are territories of Ukraine, including Crimea. So in that situation, nobody starts peace talk. And the West is interested in continuing and fueling the conflict. So because they see Russian failures, they could give more and more arms and weapons to Ukraine in order to prolong that. So everybody isn't in position, nobody is in position to start peace talk. So I think all declaration that some side is ready to peace talk in present conditions is purely words. So we could not, nobody is ready to peace talk. Peace talks can start after some serious changes, when this still stand ceases. So when there will be a kind of change of balance to one or other side, after that it is possible.
But the West says, well, if we accept this, if we allow Russia, sort of, if we give them an inch, they'll take a mile. So if we allow this to happen now, then any country will think, well, we can go into any territory and change the course of the country's future there. That's how they explain it. So in that case, will they ever accept any scenario where Russia wins in any sort of way, even though, as you said, it paints Russia as the enemy, which is something that they need?
I think that the only material resource that could use to prevent us to do that, it is use of nuclear weapon. But they could use nuclear weapon, the West could use nuclear weapon, in the when the situation will be critical for them. But to let the Russia to reinstall its control over the territories that during the centuries were already under influence of Russia, without Russia creating some existential threat and challenge for the West, it is not the final situation. They will be not obliged to fight for Ukraine, because losing Ukraine, they don't lose anything.
Right now, we're waiting for something to change in the mentality of people. We're waiting for something to change on the ground. We're waiting for something to change, politically speaking, to shift the conversation one way or another, as we said, to come out of this standstill. We're waiting for something big, I assume, to make both sides act and do something to change. In the meantime, though, Russia is seeking new partnerships because the West, of course, is trying to cut off Russia from the world. But the world is much bigger than just the United States and Europe, of course. And we're seeing Russia form partnerships with other countries. We know that it's looking into the global south. It's looking into Africa as a continent and doing partnerships with various countries there. How do you see these new friendships that Russia is forming now?
First of all, I think that the majority of humanity is somehow on our side. Somehow. Not openly, not fully, but everybody will have positive results if the world will be multipolar. So Russian victory in Ukraine mean immediately multipolarity. Multipolarity means immediately not only the achievement on full-scale sovereignty, geopolitical sovereignty for us, but automatically for China, that is already other poll, third poll, and we will have immediately after our victory three polar world already made, and there will be India, that is four almost ready, fourth poll, because India is great space, big civilization, and huge country with huge demography, huge potential in economy, and not participating neither on the side of the West nor on our side, India could gain extremely many positive results in the multipolar world. Not necessarily being on the side of China or the West, but the multipolarity opens immediately many possibility of the alliances, of the rearrangements, of the balance of power on the regional scale. Islamic world, all the Islamic people living in the multipolar world could start to defend seriously their religious identity, and that is impossible under a global dominance of the LGBT plus technological, technocentric, technocratic West. Western hegemony is incompatible with Islam. So Islam, finally, after our victory, will become the real player on the global scale, and not regional, divided and manipulated by the West. So all the reasons for all Muslims in the world to support Russian victory, because it will be their victory immediately. The same is true for Latin America, and the same is true for Africa. But I don't think that they could seriously help us meantime, before we get this victory. So everybody will use the results, objective results of the victory, but nobody will help us in the critical way. So that is very, very, very particular situation. We should win ourselves, and only winning, relying on our own powers, the other will be on our side. We, in this war, we are fighting as well for the support of the other.
Do you think that the United States or the West will ever allow there to be a multipolar world? Ever? Or will it just pretend to allow it in the beginning, as you said, in the three scenarios you laid out, Russia wins in every single one, but in one of the scenarios the US wins because it has an enemy. It has an enemy to fight, and it always needs an enemy. But will it allow it even temporarily?
I think that on the theoretical way, that was already accepted by people like Samuel Huntington. The conflict of civilizations is based, as a theory, as the concept, is based on recognition of these independent, sovereign, great spaces of civilization. So they, theoretically, the West is prepared as alternative to this continuation of globalization, of unipolarity, and the end of the history. There is the line of the specialists in international relations that already deals with such inevitable development of the change of the global architecture. And on the other side, we had a real example of the acceptance of multipolarity by President of the United States in the case of Donald Trump. Donald Trump had nothing against multipolarity, and he was radically against globalism and global liberal agenda of the Biden and Democrats. So the half of United States is already prepared to accept multipolarity, because you can clearly and easily imagine the greatness of the United States, of the West, the prosperity of the West, continuation of their own culture and their own technological development with other poles. And they could, as Buchanan has said, America, United States, has won the world, but has lost itself, herself. So it is. We could put this phrase other ways. So America could now win itself and let the world alone.
And of course, I cannot help but mention the tragic loss of your own daughter in all this. We offer our deepest and sincerest condolences to you. We sympathize with your pain. So victory, in this case, for you in particular, is something I would imagine that's personal. It hits home.
You know, I have no revenge. I have no sentiment of revenge. For me, the revenge will not mean victory, absolutely. So I could not blame the enemy because it is enemy. It is a little bit. It is difficult to accept the killing of an innocent daughter, innocent girl, not participating in the military conflict, not financing it, not being involved in it, not participating in the full-scale state propaganda. She just expressed her own vision. It is a kind of injustice. I feel it as unjust, but I don't have any sentiment and feeling of revenge, because I understand that in this war we are killing each other. We are the same people. We are Russians, and they kill our daughter and sons, and we are leaving our friends, losing our friends there, but they have their losses as well. And I could not think that, for example, killing many people of the enemy could compensate that loss. Not at all. It makes the pain more painful, I would say. But I think the victory is other thing. So I think that victory is personal for myself, not because of Daria, but because of my people, because I'm part of the victory. I'm part of my people. I and my family and my daughter and my son and my granddaughter and newly born grandson and my wife and all of us, we are part of Russian people. And we could not separate ourselves, our destiny, our fate, our mission from our people, and we could not say, oh, it is personal and that is common. It is the same for us. And that is my life is totally dedicated to service to my people, to my civilization, to my culture, to my state. We Russians, we deeply believe that we have some very special mission to accomplish in the history. And now, as long as I understand, we are very near to this critical and crucial moment. And maybe because of that, the pain is so high and so deep and so unbearable, because we are very near to this final moment of our history, when we are presumed to accomplish some huge spiritual act.
Mr. Dugin, thank you very much for your time. You're a very strong man. Thank you for taking the time to speak to us.